see. This is an interview conducted by the Kimsley Library. It is January 26th. We're in the home of Margaret Buzz Snoblin. All right, Margaret, what is your full name? No, you don't have to give your middle name.
Margaret E. Snoblin.
And where do you currently reside?
416 East 4th Street, Kimsley, Kansas, 67547.
And when and where were you born?
In Muscadet, Wisconsin, September the 29th, 1919.
And what were the names of your parents?
Emmeline Caroline Lemke and Peter Otto Lemke.
And your mother's maiden name?
Schlump, S-C-H-L-U-M-P.
And maybe we should ought to spell Lemke, too, for our transfer.
Okay, L-E-M-K-E.
All right, and then your grandparents, what were their names?
Mary Delp Schlump and John Schlump. On my father's side, I don't know. Grandpa Lemke was dead before I was born, and Grandma Lemke died shortly after, and I just never saw him. She was a Fleming and married a Lemke, but I don't even know what my grandpa's first name was.
And what was your household like? Your brothers, sisters, that sort of thing?
I had one sister, Marcelite, and we lived a very normal, average household in the city limits of Muscadet, and the majority of our relatives lived in the surrounding territory because most of them were either cheesemakers or farmers. And
what was your father?
Hmm?
What did your father do?
My father worked in a furniture factory. And my mother was a wonderful seamstress, and for a very short time, she helped her sister, who was a professional seamstress.
Okay. This is going to get into your history, I know. What brought you to Edwards County?
My husband, unbeknownst to me. Because he had been separated from the Navy, and he had a wife and a child, and he thought he'd better start looking for a job. So he and his father, while I stayed home with the child, didn't even know where they were going. I didn't know what direction they were going. And they came over the viaduct in Kimsley, Kansas, and my husband looked over the down there, and his town looked very pretty. It had a lot of trees, and he wasn't used to that, being born in arid Oklahoma. And this looked beautiful to him, and he said it looked like a nice place to stay or make a living. And so he scouted around and found out that there were two doctors here. The older doctor was pretty much on his last legs.
What was his name?
Stoltenberg. And sometimes he practiced and sometimes he didn't. So Rean went to see Dr. Unruh. And when he went to his office, there was standing room only, which gave Rean hope. And talked to him, and Dr. Unruh said that it was such a heavy load, he was going to either have to get some help or move someplace else. This was music, of course, to Rean's ears. Life couldn't be this easy. And so, after talking a little while, yes, and Dr. Unruh had an excellent background. He had got one degree from a London, England school, and so, and he had been in the war too, and so it looked like this would be fine, that they could get along. Green was going to be across the street in an office, but they would have to certainly work together, and this seemed like a sensible, reasonable, and hopefully profitable business.
Just out of curiosity, had Green looked at any other towns, or Mm-mm. This was it?
Mm-hmm. Well, he didn't want to live too close to his hometown, mm-hmm. because we stopped one afternoon while we were, before he started looking, and some guy walked up to him and said, "Oh, you're Renee Snowblin, Omer Snowblin's little boy." He said, "This place isn't for me." So we decided we couldn't live there, and his father, of course, had a lot of this he had, but he said, I just don't think it would work. So that's why we looked someplace else.
Okay, well, let's go back then just a little bit and, you know, sort of tell us what you were doing during the war or how you met Rain and all that.
Okay. Well, prior to the war, I worked in the hospital. I was in a typing pool at where the medical school was and the hospital, the university hospital. It was all in.
And what, where is this?
It's in Madison, Wisconsin. And at that time, it seemed like, of course, I don't know how medical schools are now. I only know that one. But Rain would be walking in the halls, and I would see him, and sometimes he nodded, and sometimes he didn't, and I never thought much about it one way or the other. But unfortunately, or fortunately, I ate some tainted tuna fish and got really sick. And they had to put me in the hospital, and he happened to be the intern at that time who took care of me. So we got to know each other. Well,
you looked
better than I wished, in a different way, actually. But there it was. And so, and of course, we got to know each other, and not real well, and we didn't have a lot of dates or anything, but that's how we met. And this was in, he was already there a half a year. He would only have another half a year. And in that half a year before he went on to his residency, we only had six dates. And I was Republican, and he was Democrat. He was Catholic, and I was Presbyterian, and nobody gave much hope for this union. And it worked.
So, within 6 months, you decided you were getting married.
Well, it took another half a year. Mm-hmm. We just kind of wrote to each other, and then we decided long-distance romance wasn't much fun either. So, after a couple visits to me up there, we decided this is the way to be.
And this is before the war.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. And you got married before he was in the Navy, or after, or?
Yes, he was in his residency, mm-hmm. and he had another, 3 months to go, and, but we got married. He just really started his residency when we got married, and in Madison, Wisconsin. But and moved to Muskogee. That's where he was. And then in September of that year, he came home one day and said, "Well, I've enlisted in the Navy." And here again, it may be my personality, but I think it also is the way women were 50, 60 years ago. Instead of throwing my apron over my head and crying, I said, "Okay, all right." You know, so that was the end of that. And he went in the Navy, and the first place we were was Corpus Christi, Texas, and then we were moved around in various
places. And you stayed with him? You followed him?
Yes, until he went overseas.
So you lived in Corpus Christi?
Well, for a month.
No.
And then they moved him back to Tulsa, Oklahoma, and he was the only officer there, so he had his hands full. He examined people, but he also had to put his stamp on a lot of paperwork to do. But it worked fine, and it was there during the time that I got pregnant. And then he was moved to North Carolina, and I can't even remember what that was. anyway, Renee was 3 months old, and we got there Christmas Eve, and it didn't make any difference that he was an officer. I mean, the thing of it is, you took what they had. So we looked for a house or something to live in, and this didn't bother me, but the only place they had was in the colored area, and that was all right, but this was the whole house wasn't as big as this room, and you had a wood stove that I was going to have to, and I frankly didn't think I could keep us warm. He wasn't going to be there to do it, and well, and it was dirty, and so we went to a motel or hotel for that night, and the next day, and he went to where he was going to work and told him our predicament, and a woman who was what is it when they don't believe in doctors?
Scientology. Christian Science.
Christian Science. And she had broken her arm, and she would not have a cast on. And so she needed somebody, some help. So that's where I landed. And I helped her, and I had Renee, and he was off at the fort getting ready to fight the war. And in a month, he came back every weekend, but a month, we just there a month, and he came and he said, "I'm being shipped overseas. Time for you to go home." So I called my folks, and yes, they were tickled to death to have me. And
keep going.
It was hard even to get a ticket on a train, you know, because it was always full of the troops. Well, he got me a ticket as far as Cincinnati. And he unstrapped the watch on his arm and put that on my arm when he kissed me goodbye at the train. Said, "At least you can see when to feed the baby." And put me on the train and said, "You're on your own." And I said, "Okay." I took some formula along, and I warmed that formula in the bottles between my legs. That's how I warmed it. I mean, they were feeding the troops, and I, since my husband was going to fight the war, by golly, I was going to do my bit. So I didn't gripe or anything. I just did this, and fortunately, Renee liked being left alone, and if I just covered her up good and her face was dark, she liked that, and so she was a real good baby. Everything went well, and I got to Cincinnati, and lo and behold, here a guy came up to me and said, "For heaven's sake, Margaret Lemke, how are you?" Well, I said, "No longer Lemke, Snowblin, but I'm in kind of a fix." I said, "I'm having to get a ticket and go on to Chicago. I thought if I could get as far as Chicago, I sure could get home." Well, only thing that he's a little drunk, but he was an officer, which helped. He says, "Don't worry, I'll get you a seat," and he did. And I mean, that got me as far as Chicago, which I was delighted. I mean, I put up with whatever he said. Well, and he wasn't honored or anything. In fact, it was rather entertaining, you know. He told me what he was doing and everything, and we talked about good old times. And when I left him there, I got to Chicago, and I got a train to Muscadet, but I hadn't eaten for about 2 days. I had a few snacks and stuff, and I was really hungry, and I was sitting in the lobby of the train station and in the depot, and I could see the dining room, which was making me salivate awfully heavily because I was so hungry, and there was a little old lady beside me, but I didn't know what to do with Renee. And so she finally said to me, "Do you want to go to the dining room?" And I said, "Yes." And she said, "I'll take care of the baby." Well, I was scared to death to let her, but there wasn't anybody else around her. And I thought, and I looked in the dining room, and I saw a seat where I could see her. And I thought, if I can see her and watch her while I eat, I think I can do it. But I really was in danger of not making it home. I just hadn't had hardly anything to eat. So I did, and it worked. I had a lot of good luck, you know, and got a ticket to go to Chicago and from there to Madison and on home. And then I was home, of course, for almost 3 years, and which worked well. I was glad to be home and have a place to be, you know. And so that's where I spent my time when my husband was overseas.
And then doctor came back, and how long before you were off looking, or he was off looking for Kinsley?
Well, I mean about a month. Mm-hmm. Not very long. And, you know, I look back on it, and I think he made a very wise decision. I really do. We didn't know a soul. We had what little furniture was secondhand, and glad to have that. Didn't have a stove, didn't have a refrigerator, found an ice box that held 10 pounds of ice, and Rainer would come home from his office at noon and have 10 pounds of ice on his back and put it in the ice box, and when he'd come home in the evening, he'd bring a little more, and we'd chip it up and throw it in there, and that's the way it worked till we could find a refrigerator. But this is the house we started in, and we've stayed in it.
Well, now, he found this house, and then he came back and got you, and you moved out here by car and together?
Yes. He called me over the phone, and he said, I found a house, and he said, I know what it'll look like someday. I said, okay. And it looked awfully big to me. Of course, it was empty. And it was needed to repair, but it was livable. I'm always amazed at how people think they've got to go into a house. And we had a peach box tipped up on the side with a little radio on, and we had a divan, which, by the way, is still in use, because it was a Kohler. It's beautifully built, and Renee, when she had it in her garage waiting to get it recovered, a man came up and offered her $1,200 for it when it was in rags. I mean, the stuff was... So she has carried that all over the United States. It's up in Delaware now, which I think is interesting.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Let's see. So you came here and you didn't know anybody.
Mm-mm.
So how did he go about setting up his practice with Dr. Unruh and Eric Frost from Dr.
Well, for 3 months, I think it was, he was across the street, and that was above the old Smith thing on...
Smith Confectionery?
Yeah.
That's where Dr. Unruh was
upstairs? No, that's where Reen was.
Reen was.
Dr. Unruh was up above where Watson's is. And in that, there was Dr. Iserman and Dr. Smith and Dr. Unruh.
Oh, okay.
And, I really don't know how come they decided. Well, I remember as a child, it seemed like the doctors were always upstairs, mm-hmm. and I never could figure that out.
Yeah.
And they both decided it would have been a lot easier for the patient if they were downstairs. So that's when they moved east of the Ford garage. And we cleaned that place up and laid new floor, new linoleum, and laid some curtains and made it into a... Well, it was a very efficient office. There was nothing wrong with it. And it worked great. Why we didn't stay there is another story, which you may not or may want to know. So...
No, you're doing just great.
Of course I want to know the story of why you moved, but not now.
Okay.
Well, how long were you there? We'll tell you.
Well, we were there, I suppose, a couple of years, but I won't mention names.
And this is in the, is this, are we still in the 50s, or we moved up to the 60s? Or
this is in the 50s. And the man who owned it, after we fixed it all up, he would raise the rent. Well, finally, my husband went to him and he said, look, this is getting a little high. I'm trying to make a living. And the man said, so am I. Well, he said, I'm not concerned with your living, but I am concerned with mine. So he said, came home and he said to me, I'm going to build an office. And so I did something that was terrible. I don't know, you want to put this in there. I was so mad at the man because Bertha Unruh and I had scrubbed floors. We had washed windows. We had made curtains. We had done all this to make this place attractive and workable. So I went there one night and I put a hex on it. And you know, he wasn't able to get that thing rented for about a year. And then I felt kind of bad.
Now this is the Rumsey. Okay.
And Dr. Unruh and your husband were together?
Yes. They were. And it really worked so well. Dr. Unruh was about 10 years older than Reen. And he's just enough older to, he'd had more experience. And they just got along real well, probably because they both were in the war, you know, and had seen a lot. Nothing much shocked them. And that's another thing that I think made a difference. Yeah. I mean, anything that was brought up, they'd seen worse. So they got along fine. And
how did the community accept the new young doctor?
Well, there's one woman who said, some woman said, I'll preface this, because actually we were accepted very well, I think. But you know how I am. I think everything's great. But this one woman, somebody told me this. They asked her, and they said, have you gone to Dr. Sublin yet? She said, no, he's too much Sinatra for me. But he had a little mustache, and so.
Now, Reen was Catholic. Did he have any problems here coming into this? Of course, there was a lot of Catholics, but was there any prejudice?
Well, now, listen, I don't know whether you should put this in because I don't want to offend anybody.
Do you want me to stop it?
Yes, and then I'll
start it over there.
Dr. Unruh was Methodist, and there were a lot of Methodists here, and they really, the Methodists were on the school board, and they had a lot of power. So when we came, however, we didn't give that much thought when we came, actually, until when we settled down, and Reen said, you know, I think I can make a living here, he said. Between the Catholics and the Mexicans, I think they'll come to me and I think I can make it. Well, one of the first ones that came was a really lovely Mexican family here. Their name was Molina, and you may remember them. And they looked like Spanish royalty. They had the same features and everything. But Mrs. Molina couldn't speak English. So they came to Reen, and she had something done. And so she asked her, told her husband to ask how much the office call was. And so Reen said, 6 enchiladas. And the next time they came, they brought him 6 enchiladas. But we knew them real well, and
were there at that time period? Were there other people that paid their doctor bills by?
Now there was one family. They gave us chickens, but he just didn't. He just couldn't charge them anything, and he didn't. But about once every 3 weeks or a month, she'd bring a chicken. And no, because at that time office calls were $2. A call. So, you know, most people really could handle that. Mm-hmm. And Reen, he didn't very often send out a bill unless they wanted it, because he said, really, basically these people always come in and pay me. Mm-hmm. He said, Reen was a, and I don't know how to explain him, but he was the common man. He was man of the soil, he was man of the earth, and And I think people were very comfortable with him, you know. And he made friends with all the farmers because he wanted to hunt prairie dogs, and they wanted the prairie dogs killed, so that worked. And, you know, I just feel it, I don't know, it worked out so well. And, of course, Ettlings, we didn't know this neighborhood at all when we moved in, but Ettlings were on this side, and Mr. Ettling was very generous with his legal advice to us. He really was. Dr. Eisenberg was on this side, and he looked at his teeth, and then, of course, if somebody needed something, we kind of fell into it. And so it just seemed to me a very easy way of getting started. I didn't think it would ever be this easy to establish a practice. And it took me a while to get acquainted with everybody, and I don't think I really fit the pattern for a doctor's wife either, because somebody told me later on, they said, well, Buzz, you wore Rean's shirts when you were pregnant. Well, there wasn't much else to wear. And I, as I look back on it, I think probably I didn't. And I know somebody came around wanting me to sign something, and it was coming up for a vote, and I wouldn't do it. And I thought, how did I have the courage to do that? Because this was very early in the game, and we tried to put our best foot forward. We really did. Of course, we always went to church. Mm-hmm. We sent the kids to Catholic school. We did our best to show people we were honest and meant to stay. And Rean always did feel like he was a servant of the people. And a highfalutin term like his profession or something. I mean, he was a doctor. He was making a living to support us. And he looked at it very sensibly. And I think that helped, too.
Do you think the community also appreciated having the second doctor in town?
Yes, they did. They really did. And there was too much for Dr. Ernie. There just was. And, see, there was no hospital here. Mm-hmm. You didn't take turns. If they wanted the doctor and they'd seen my husband in the afternoon at 4 o'clock and wanted him at 9, they didn't go to the other. They came here at the house. And that was like that for 4 years. He delivered babies in Spearville Hospital and would go over twice a day to make calls at the hospital. He'd get up at 7 in the morning and go over there and make the rounds and come back and work till 5 and eat supper and go over after supper and make his rounds again. But and that hospital over there, I mean, he and Dr. Arnold did everything. Appendices, tonsillectomy, delivering babies. You know, they just did. And that isn't just so wonderful. It just was a necessity. That's the way they were taught in that day and age. And most, of course, so many doctors I realize would rather be in a larger town and have a specialty. And one reason Rean wanted to be a country doctor, he said, I'd be bored stiff with doing the same thing day after day after day. He said, the things that happened to me were so interesting, and they were. They really were. And he liked doing what he did. So that was what made it so wonderful.
So about what year was it when he built his office?
And that I don't know either.
And where was it?
Well, it was sometime in the 50s.
Now, where was it?
Where Dr. Ray's office was down there. That's where he built it. And see, the hospital was in his backyard, or he was in their backyard. So it was.
So do you know when the hospital was built then? We can look that up at the library.
Uh-huh. And And however, Rain did that himself. He, I don't know if Dr. Unruh didn't want to be part of, and he probably didn't want to fuss with it. And C. Marsh's husband was a contractor, and so he built the office here again. We had, that was a lot of good luck. But, yeah.
For a short while, well, I don't know how long, there was a hospital right across from the Catholic Church, the two-story.
Yes, now that was before we came.
That was before you came.
Uh-huh. So okay,
thank you.
It must have been like...
Well, I have it at the library, but mm-hmm. I don't...
Yeah, people tell me about that.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe during the war in there, did we lose our hospital?
I don't think
so. Well, then why was he going to Spearville?
Oh, well, there was no place to go.
Before this hospital was built.
Mm-hmm. See, this hospital was not built.
Until
we had no hospital. Well, except... Well, but when we came, see, that hospital wasn't... That's that duplex, isn't it? There mm-hmm. across from the Catholic Church.
Yes.
See, that wasn't working then.
Well, that's why I was wondering, why is there a lapse? If they had that little hospital... Yeah, wasn't that a hospital where Crystal Olby used to have hers? Or what was that? It's over here somewhere.
Well, there was, where the Fifth Avenue apartment was.
Yes.
That was a hospital.
That's what I thought. What's the time period of that?
Well, I think it's sometime in the 50s.
In the early 50s.
Early 50s.
Because,
And that was a Lutheran hospital.
Mm-hmm. It was. Mm-hmm. That was in the early 50s.
So did he work out of there too then?
Well, yeah, then he did all his work here.
Okay, so we have a little, and I was wondering if it was during the war when maybe there wasn't a hospital here, we lost it during those years.
I don't know, but maybe that's when this one at...
It seems like that one was built in the 30s, but that's my memory, which mm-hmm. isn't, mm-hmm. not, reli- it is not reliable. Mm-hmm. But I have all of that stuff on the computer.
Okay.
So
I'd be interested in knowing too, because it is. No, when this hospital really was very nice, and it mm-hmm. almost made me feel bad that they built another one when they did. Of course, it was small, and that's when Kinsey was bigger than it is now. So consequently, sort of like the churches and everything else that they built, we built for.
So when Reen built his office, he would have had what? A nurse, two nurses, reception?
No. He had a lab tech, a receptionist, and he and Dr. Unruh. And he always trained his own lab techs, even if they were nurses, because he said, I know what I want. And he said, they learn a lot of things that I would never use. So he trained them always. And it worked real well, you know. It was a very efficient place, I'll say that. He designed it, and he had his own x-ray machine, too, because, I don't know why he had that, because the hospital was here then, and they had an x-ray machine, but he did, because I think afterwards, the crate that it came in, he made a bed out of it. He needed a bed. So.
And he was pretty much on call 7 days a week?
Well,
all hours? Or?
Would not know. And then they began to... See, Dr. Atwood came fairly soon after, in the 50s, didn't he?
Yes. I can't remember when.
And he was a very devoted mm-hmm. man, believe me. He really was. And he just was a good man. And act like my husband wasn't, but I mean, he was just a different personality completely. Mm-hmm. And
he had his office upstairs.
Yes.
Above the antique shop from Dr.
Atwood
came. So that was, you were still going upstairs
uh-huh.
in the 50s.
And then I don't know when he built his office.
So there were three doctors then by the middle of the 50s? Or
yeah. Well, there was for a short time, and then Dr. Unruh died.
Okay.
So there was And then we had Dr. McKim here for a while, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a good doctor. I mean, he was a smart doctor. He was rather unusual. And
is that M-C-K-I-M?
Yes, M-C-K-I-M, yes.
Mm-hmm.
But he really was a good doctor. He did good work. And so they had him, but then he moved away, didn't he?
Mm-hmm. Then we had a series of doctors, it seems like.
Yeah, came and went.
Came and went.
They didn't stay very long, and they, you know. But their doctor, Atwood, he stayed till he quit, and just like
I went to Dr. Atwood when I first came.
Yeah, he was really a nice man. He was overly protective almost, so, I mean, he just was so kind. I remember Reen retired before he did, so I had to go to him. I was for an insurance policy that I was renewed or something. And of course, Reen had always taken my blood pressure, and so it didn't make me nervous. So the first time I went to anybody else, my blood pressure shot up. Oh, poor Dr. Atwood, this just upset him, so. I don't know, we better sit here a while and we'll come back and do it. He finally got it down to where, but he practically apologized that my blood pressure went up. And I know he really felt that way.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I suppose Dr. Atwood and Green were a good balance for each other. They were at opposite ends of the spectrum. They really were. And whoever didn't like Atwood should go to Reen, and who didn't like him could go to Atwood, and I think it balanced out about right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so. But see, when we first came here, Reen would go out in the country. He had a nurse then, by golly, because he would always take her, and they'd go and do. I remember one night that he was way down in Shrewsdale, snowing, miserable. And this woman was really in deep tapioca. I mean, she was miserable. And anyway, he said he just sweat blood because he said, I couldn't do a cesarean. You know, here they were, the nurse. Finally, everything happened. But, doctors took real chances then. And they had to.
Yeah, there was no choice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What else did they ever do?
People didn't sue then. So.
No, they didn't. You're right. Because Reen practiced all those years and was never sued until 3 days before he quit, before his insurance ran out. And he called another doctor assist for this appendectomy. And so when this man sued him, they went to the lawyer, and the lawyer said, this is known as a nuisance suit. He said, well, they sued. That's when, do you remember, Rosetta, when the hospital was run by the Lutherans?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. They sued the Lutherans, and they sued Reen, and they sued the doctor who was helping him, and they sued the hospital beside the Lutherans. Anyway, for the whole thing was $10,000, and that's why they called it the nuisance suit. They said the lawyers figured everybody will throw in $2,000 and say, heck with it. Well, Reen, this doctor said, well, we're not doing it. We didn't do anything wrong and we're not paying it. And of course their insurance would have, but it was finally thrown out of court after it went through about three courts or four courts. It was finally thrown out, but I was really proud of them because no, they said, we're not having that on our record. We haven't been sued, and we're not going to be sued, and have them win it.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it was, and the thing of it is, I didn't know then that if, when somebody sues you, they can put a lien on something. And they put a lien on our office. And when I went to, I guess somebody wanted to buy it or something. Well, I couldn't sell it because there was a lien on it. So I went to a lawyer, and I said, well, don't they have to tell you? And he said, no. And I didn't know that. Did you?
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, that worked out all right, too.
Well, I know from other discussions with you that Reen was doctor to the Hispanic community. To the Hispanic community.
Mm-hmm.
And we did have black families at that time.
Mm-hmm.
How? What was your viewpoint of the minorities in town? And I know you've described living conditions.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, see, having lived in Wisconsin, well, we just never had any minorities. So this was all new to me, so it was just interesting more than anything else. Shade sang with the Winchester boy, or
Kenny.
Yeah. That he had a good voice, and she had a good voice, and somebody even that day and age looked askance at that.
I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
That would have been in the.
Well, Shade's 62 years old now.
Well, I'm trying to think. She was born. You told us that.
Mm-hmm.
In 47, and this would have been when she's a teenager. So this would be 57 in the 60s.
But they. I do think that, the Mexicans were looked upon for whatever reason, I don't know. I mean, I never could figure it out because I came from a different area and didn't understand it. And of course, the first time Renee ever saw a black man, he was, who was it that always did housework?
Skeet Winchester.
All right, and he was working for Etling's. He went over there and did it. And Renee, of course, was back and forth over to Etling's. And Margaret Etling told me that, and she came in and she looked at him and she said, she was only 5 or 6 years old, she said, "My, you have a beautiful tan." She just, so, we just never had any feeling about it. I think Reen probably did, having been raised in Oklahoma.
So, as a newcomer to the community, you could see prejudice?
Yes. I sure could.
How about, was there any problem with the blacks or Hispanics coming to the office the same doctor's office as the white?
Not to our office, there wasn't. No, in fact, Irene, the last lab tech he had was a Spanish woman. But we had, it's about that time when that Spaniard lived out on Freddie Charlotte's.
Mm-hmm.
And he hired a lot of people, and a lot of them really couldn't speak English. But they came to Irene for whatever reason, I don't know. And he said, they'd come in, they'd poke their throat. He said, "I didn't know they had a fishbone in it or whether it was sore." So he said he hired this woman, and he hired her, and she didn't know anything about lab. And she said, "I can't believe you want me." He said, "Well, I do, because," he said, "you're going to be a great help whether you know it or not." And he taught her laboriously how to do these things, and of course she was bright and smart, and she could do it. But no, I never saw anything like that.
Well, in other places in town, they had to use the back door.
Mm-hmm.
Would be served in the back rather than doing the front door and that. But the doctor's office was they would sit in the waiting room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they sat right in the waiting room next to anybody else, mm-hmm. which is wonderful.
Yeah. And then I know you told me the story about going over to the railroad workers' place anyway. Well, this may have been a little later. I can't remember where there was tuberculosis.
Yes.
You want to tell that?
Well, these people that worked on the railroad, they lived on the other side of the tracks, and they were block houses. And there were a lot of them, But Reen, evidently, here again, he must have made house calls there. But so many of the people that he treated, they had tuberculosis, and when he went over there, he knew why. He said the houses were dank and damp, and they just were awful. So, and at that time, Rosetta, didn't we have a county doctor? Or no, you remember Sarah Zella? We had.
She was our county health.
She was our county health. Did they have a county doctor?
Not that I know of, but I just remember the county health nurse, because she came around to all the different schools, and you had to have your teeth checked, and you had to have your shots.
Yes, yes.
She made sure you did.
Yes. But he did get that done. He said, that can't be.
What did he get done?
When?
What?
What did he do?
Yeah.
I don't know who he went to, even. You don't really... Joan, I didn't know much about it.
Well, but I mean, were the houses bulldozed? I mean, we haven't said on the tape what he actually did. How did he get it cleaned up?
I don't know who he went to, but he said they've got to be knocked down. They were. And that's when they started moving into town. And they kind of did move in kind of a one spot.
Most of them north of the tracks.
Yes, like the Molinas did, the Chicans, the Rincons. That they all moved on, but they were in decent homes, and it sure made a difference.
And they couldn't have probably moved to the south part of town.
I don't know. No.
I don't think so.
Now, that housing was just provided by the railroad, right?
Evidently.
And so, yeah.
We thought they were the railroad, I suppose.
Yeah, they were all railroad workers, and it was provided, and they just didn't upkeep it.
That's just where they lived.
We've had other descriptions of those houses, that housing.
Mm-hmm. So, and we have come a long way. In my lifetime, of course, this is several decades.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that's what I thought, but it won't go in.
This is so good.
Oh, that's why.
But you know, I look at even the difference in women, the difference in it. And as a child, I really can remember, and Mama, I can remember Mama telling me, she said, well, and Mama was kind of ahead of her time. She didn't like this business that women were put upon and used as a chattel, more or less. And she said she can remember saying to her mother, where did Papa go? Papa went to town to vote. And that was that. Mm-hmm. But my folks were always interested in things. For whatever reason, I really don't know. But I can remember them taking me, to city meetings, town meetings, you know, when an issue was coming up. And now I look on that and I think, well, golly, that was wonderful that they were interested in it. And I suppose that's why I am, up to a point.
Well, I was thinking when you were talking, even, you know, your husband picking a house out without communicating.
Yes.
And then, you know, these are... Well, something else you said that he did. Joining the Navy, yeah.
Yes.
Today, most couples would confer over these decisions.
They certainly would. They certainly would. Like Renee and Jerome, you know, going up to Delaware. It took both of them. And it took them a year to find what they wanted. But they did it together. And the only time I really put my foot down... His father was up here helping him, and the door that goes into the hall, that actually went into a basement, and then there was a compartment, so that the hall was just like the girls called it the dark hole of Calcutta, and that's just about the way it looked. And but Grandpa came up and was helping Green, and they were doing this together, you know, and we did a lot of it ourselves. And I came home and I said, my gosh, what are you doing? Well, Dad, he said, thought you'd have a lot more room if we nailed up this door and just had... And I said, Rena, I can't stand that. And I said, I think it would be better if you told him instead of me telling him. So he did. But that's the only thing that I want to think of what I stood up for.
Well, I know that we used to have horse shows down in front of the old grandstand.
Uh-huh.
And then a few weeks later, we had football practice down there, and your husband got that stopped. That's the story that I've been
hearing. Yeah, mm-hmm. He did.
Because he didn't think it was very good for the football boys
to be
playing where the horses had just been.
Yes, had just. Yeah, I do remember that because he came home and he had a kind of an argument, but he said, no, it can't be. I'm always amazed that, and I realize the thing that I admire so about Remus is his being able to stand up for what he believed in. And I always felt real safe with him. I said, even when he had Alzheimer's, and if he was in the car beside me, he couldn't drive, but, you know, boy, as long as he was there, I just thought I could have gone any place. Mm-hmm. And I really did. It was just that made me feel good.
Can you think of, now that's two things, getting the railroad hoses demolished and then the football field. Are there any other issues in town that he ever, that you can think of?
No, I can't. He was a city commissioner. I don't know, I can't remember anything. He was a bank director. And of course, he was the coroner for a long time, too.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you know, the coroner so many times was the mortician.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he said, really, you need to have somebody with some medical knowledge, because he said, so many times people die of rather odd reasons, and you really need to know. So, but he was at that for a long time, I remember. Kind of enjoyed that. He said it was very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember one year we went to Canada to a meeting. He wanted to, it was some special meeting about coroners, so we did. All right.
I'm trying to think. Anything else in the medical community that we need to get?
No, except that, like,
now, polio, shot would have been, came in when you were here?
Yeah, oh, yes, I remember. The van was over against that wall, and a woman, well, she came to the door, and her little boy was sick. And, of course, I was one of those that opened the door, come on in. So, the little boy had polio, of course, and I didn't know it, and he threw up. And the kids, of course, they weren't in here, but I mean they were dashing around, and so he I don't know where he sent him or if they, I just know he came in. He said, Buzz, that little boy has polio. And of course I just sweat blood for about 2 weeks. I just was so afraid my children would get it. Yeah, really, people brought, I remember we had just sanded the floor in the den, and somebody had an accident at 10 o'clock at night, and they brought him over, they bled all over the floor, so we sanded it again. But those were just things that you did in that day and age, and it isn't that we did anything unusual. I don't mean to act like
well,
that.
Well, no, but it is unusual for this day and age, and so it's good to remember that and put it down.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That this was not unusual, but it did happen.
Well, this is another funny thing, and I won't mention the name here again, but a girl just in 8th grade, and she'd broken a finger, and Rain always had a pocket knife, and she came into the office, and that's when we were east of the Ford garage, and she told me this herself. And she said, he looked at her hand, yeah, I said, it's broken. And he said, you've got such little fingers. He said, I couldn't put a cast on that. She said, he whipped out his knife and went out the backyard, and he came back and he had a shingle. Shaved it off, and the nurse put alcohol on it and put it on her hand and bandaged it up. And and she said, come back in a week. And she said, works great.
Can you think of other things, ways that he made do with the limited?
I wish I could remember this one thing that he did. And some man had swallowed
ground glass by mistake, and he had made something with a big syringe and pulled it out of his stomach. Because he said, by the time we get him to hospital, he's gonna be bleeding from.
Mm-hmm.
But the doctors just did. However, Reen, here again, I think his best education probably was the war. You know, they bandaged up, they did this, they did that. And, so.
Well, what, let's see, you came from Muscoda?
Muscadine.
Size-wise and moving here, I mean, what were the differences you saw?
Well, this was a bigger town.
Oh.
Muscadine was 1,000, and I'd never seen these big elevators before. We had silos at home, but we did not have elevators. And the first time I came in town, I thought, apartment buildings, this is a big town. I found out it was an apartment building. I did. Well, the first time, and this is when we, before the war and before we were here, but see, I'd never seen bathrooms colored and white. And I went into this place and I thought, is that pink? And is this one white? Or is that one blue? And this one white? I really didn't. It's a good thing I didn't go into the colored. Well, really, I had no idea. I just went into white because I thought that was pretty safe, you know. But then he told me, I said, golly, that's really nifty. You've got all colored bathrooms. Yeah, and see, I'd gone to college. It isn't that I just fell off the turnip wagon. I'd been around a little bit, but I just never saw things like that. The further south I was, I think, was Iowa. And, you know, you didn't travel then like you do now. Like, I look at, like I said, at Marsh's memorial here, they came from Virginia, Delaware, Florida, and really didn't make much of a fuss about it. But then, you just didn't do it.
Oh, okay. So you moved to this town, which was bigger, which was probably nice. And of course, you would have had electricity here and water and sewer and all that.
Yes.
All the modern conveniences mm-hmm. here. We're out in the country. We're interviewing people who didn't have all those things during this time period.
Yes. Of course, our town, Muscadet, didn't have a sewer system when I was little. You had to put in your own sewer. Mm-hmm. And they didn't have a water system.
Now, when Reen went out in the country to doctor, then he might have gotten into that situation where there wasn't electricity.
Yeah. Before, when he was in his residency, I was married to him then, but he came home one day and he said, I just delivered the cutest little baby. And he said, the woman gave birth in an outhouse. Then, you know, I fished it out with the poop and everything, and he said, I said, you have any oil at all? Yeah, they had some cooking oil, so he said, we washed that little thing off and cried like crazy, and the girl had never told her mother, and he did a lot of that stuff in that one, in his residency in Muskogee, Oklahoma. That he had his hands wet there too, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
But because I think in Muskogee, a third were, they were on welfare.
Mm-hmm.
It was a poor.
Mm-hmm.
And a third were Indians, mm-hmm. and a third were white. It was just about evenly done like that. So, you know, you saw a lot of really odd things.
And so you would have had telephone when you moved here. How about television? When did you get television?
Well, we didn't get television until Renee was in the eighth grade. She came home from school and said, Mother, I'm the only person in eighth grade without television. We and I would have been each other. Well, we'd never missed it. We got a television. Well, we thought, you know, maybe she is missing something. But yeah, we didn't have television here. We were one of the later ones. So.
Any other changes in that time period of the 50s and 60s that you saw? Changes in the community or in what you had for life?
Reen, he was on the city commission. He threw himself into things as well as he could. I mean, because he was just too busy, but I did a lot of things. And I like people. I still do. And I, when you remember, well, that goes on here. I was going to tell you about that when you said, what did you do for entertainment here? Should I go into that or not? Well, you know, we kind of made our own entertainment, didn't we, Rosetta?
Sure.
You know, they had a skating rink here. And in the wintertime, what was the pond down by the park down there?
I don't know what it was called. It was just
but the kids would go down there, and adults too, and they'd skate and that. But see, there was no, I wrote it down. There was the music club, if you want to call that entertainment, and I didn't. But bridge clubs were big at that time, and these women would give these huge bridge parties that when Jesse Coover lived up in the big house here, you know. And then there was, and of course, they had the gun club, which was the oldest in the state, and that's still going. And was the golf club always here?
I just looked that up. We've had a golf club since 1927, and maybe a little before that.
Well, then we had the golf club.
It was at different places, but we've had one.
And let's see, what else? And of course you had, and it is entertainment to be able to, go out to Mulligan's, where they have a bar, and have a drink, and, you know, well, if you wanted a drink, you went to Bootlegger. It was dry when we came here.
Sure.
And they didn't sell anything, did they? Beer or anything here? That came later, I think.
You know, I'm not sure when they, you know, I know that they've always had a pool hall, you know.
Well, maybe they did sell beer.
But I don't know what they sold in the pool hall.
I don't either.
Never asked.
They had a women's club.
Well, a dry county, you could have, private clubs, and maybe the pool hall at times was that.
Yeah, you say, I think that's right. I think
it could be. I don't know. I just know we've always had one from way back, but they always called it a pool hall or a billiard hall.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I think that it is entertainment to be able to go out and have a, I mean, people do it for entertainment, really. They go out and eat and have a glass of wine or something. And we just didn't have that here.
No. Mm-hmm.
And so, like I said, you made your own entertainment. You entertained people and did that sort of thing because there wasn't any.
And you were involved in the church.
Yeah, yeah. And that was part of the entertainment, you know, even the Christmas plays and that the kids did, you know.
Now, your children went to Catholic? Mm-hmm. And how big were their classes?
Oh, golly. Well, three times as big as they are now, that's for sure. I mean, they had
probably 20 or so.
You see,
when they were in the Catholic school, was there one classroom per grade, or?
No, the first Catholic school that the girls went to, it was a two-room house, and there were four grades in each room, something like that.
Okay.
And the nuns did it.
And it was on sort of the same area by the church
It was right by the church. Mm-hmm. It was this little house. And the nuns did that.
And so there were just a few children at that time.
There was quite a few.
But you see, was a Catholic out at St. Peter and Paul.
And they had it. Well, and by the way, when you're talking about entertainment, I don't know if you remember this. I remember it because I guess mostly adults, but they'd have dances out there at St. Peter and Paul. And now they did have beer. I know that. That's why everybody had such a good time. And that was entertainment, like in the summertime. Mm-hmm. And they had it on a cement slab.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, we're going to get into, you know, pretty big changes in the Catholic Church and this there and the school at this time. When you came, it was just a house. You said two rooms, and maybe what, 20 kids?
More than that. Because there was that's the class that had Jerry Felder, Renee, Stephanie Heights, Teresa Hines. I imagine there were 50, 60 kids in that.
And then
there must have been three rooms in that. There had to be.
I have that information.
Yeah. Okay. But so, and this would have been in the 50s.
Yes.
So when did they build the school that's not being used now?
It's got the date on it.
Probably in the late 50s, don't you think? In the late 50s?
Probably.
So was that because of consolidation with the other Catholic schools anything? It just the population here got to be more?
No, the population was 2,500, and there were a lot of Catholics, but they have a lot of kids.
Okay.
I mean, like now, the Catholics, it's two kids or three kids. The frames are unusual, you know, really, and it's fine. I mean, I think it's wonderful they have a good family, but you look at Desi Scherer, she had seven, Sally Hyde had six, Dennis Hathrop had 12. I mean,
so that generation had a lot of children, and so you needed a bigger school for that reason.
And you had a priest that kind of pushed it too. Was that Father Tassett?
Yes.
Father Tassett.
Uh-huh.
And he was a local boy.
Yes.
And so I think he, I think he kind of pushed it.
They gave them money for the gymnasium, maybe. Mm-hmm. And so then they built that because. And the priest's house was just a little old house. So they first built the school and the gym. And then they built the priest's house, which made me happy that they did the school and the gym first.
And then you said it was taught by sisters.
Yes, we
had. And they had a house also?
Yes, that was on the corner, right north of the church.
So how many sisters were?
At least three and maybe four.
So three or four sisters and a father who lived here.
Uh-huh. And of course the priest taught religion at that time. And the sisters. Yeah, but I think there were like four rooms at least. And there were maybe two classes in each room, but have you ever been over in that gymnasium?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, it's pretty good size. Mm-hmm. When you go on the other side. And they did do a good job. I always felt that when the kids went to public school, Father Herklotz was here then, but he was great for sports. But you remember the Lucille Gleason's boys, such wonderful basketball players. But they had good basketball teams. And Duke the Priest, the priest was in there working too.
Okay, now at this time, did the parochial school, was it just through 8th grade or was it?
Just the 8th grade. Mm-hmm.
And then they went fed into the high school.
Yeah, then they went to high school. And for years, the bus didn't pick up the Catholics. And I don't know what brought that about either. That finally, one year, they picked up the Catholic kids.
Well, I guess that's something we haven't touched on. That did you feel prejudice as a Catholic moving here?
I didn't. But you know, my skin's about this thick. You really can't go by me.
Mm-hmm.
They're not worth worrying about to me. I mean, if somebody didn't like me because I was a Catholic, I sure didn't want to know them. And just because they were so narrow,
mm-hmm.
I don't care what they were. But so I'm not really a good judge of that.
Well,
I never felt like it made any difference. Now, one woman said to me, and she never became a Catholic, her husband wasn't, she said, well, you're going to have a hard time, she said, being a Catholic. And of course, we had so many Catholics up in Wisconsin, but, and I think it was about this time that things started changing.
Well, you came back from World War II when people were not as narrow-minded as they had been before World War II.
Yeah, really. it's just like the fact that Rain could be a city commissioner, mm-hmm. That I was on the school board. Those were all things that a Catholic
could not do.
Did not do, and
the
probably
Methodist ruled the town.
Mm-hmm. You know, but I think that's because, like I said, things
change.
Changing. Thank God.
Mm-hmm. Now, when were you on the school board? What years ago?
In the 60s, 70s, late 60s and 70s.
It's when we did. It's when we and that going that goes into mm-hmm. this too. Mm-hmm. When we had consolidated.
Can you tell us a little bit about that? Feelings in the community. When that was going on, and
well, I think Ophelia knew sooner or later they were going to have to do something, and we talked about consolidation with Lewis, and Lewis didn't want anything to do with us. I mean, and they, well, I guess they're better now, but no. But anyway, that Ophelia were amenable to this. And I was on the board when it happened, and I remember the night we had to vote on it. Well, I was for it, but I didn't want it. This was like in March when we were voting on it, and we were going to get this done in time for school in September. That all the ones have come back.
Shall we pause it for a second here?
And we pushed this around, and so I abstained. I didn't vote against it. I abstained because I said, I don't think we can get this put together. Why? I mean, it takes... And, of course, I was the only one that abstained or voted against it, so it went through anyway. But that first year, I tell you, the teachers were more like babysitters than they were teachers. You know, you just couldn't. But I came home. Renee and her dad were on the couch. And, of course, both looked, well, what happened? And I told them. And what did you do? I said, I'm saying, you're yellow, they said. Why didn't you say no? And I said, I'm going to go and get a drink. I looked at them. I was so mad. I stood up for what I believed in, and I did. But see, the minute, if you remember, the minute we said, yeah, we would, they put in a new water system? But see, then we had to help pay for it because the school was then in the district. It was either sewer or water, I remember. And they probably thought of that, but mm-hmm. it was going to have to be anyway. Mm-hmm. You know, sooner or later, it just had to be. And I think it's worked quite well, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
I do. But it took a little while to, you know, do it, and then of course there were people that were mad about it for various and sundry reasons, but I'm all for anything that will improve education, and if this was going to help it, good night, be sure and do something then. But yeah.
Well, and I'm trying to think, I know you served on the library board too, was that later? Or
no, I was on that when it was built, I think.
That's the 50s, right.
Mm-hmm.
And that, maybe you can tell us a little bit. I know that levy, you know, building bond issue only mm-hmm. passed by a couple votes. And
yes. But, and you know, when you sit here, what hopes do you have or your thoughts? Of course, I think the library is one of our real pluses. And my girls do. When they come home, they say, Mother, really, this library offers anything that you can find in a city. They just think it's wonderful. And I don't know why people wouldn't vote for it. The land was given to them, wasn't it, by Mr. Lippold.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that in itself was a plus. And the fact that we put the fire station, the city building, the library... It was a sensible. I'm surprised we were so sensible, actually, really.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been wonderful. And of course, then later on, when the fire
station got too small. Then they moved it over and we made that into, which is wonderful again, you know. Mm-hmm. It worked out great for, well, like people who have their 50th wedding anniversary and birthday parties. It's really great.
And that building, I think, is 1955, I think. And before that, there was not a, the city did not own a building for a library.
No, you
this
went
is,
upstairs. You,
they rented a facility or
yeah,
put it above City Hall.
Do you remember where it was?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you went upstairs, and I don't think it was as big as this room, do you?
It always seemed extremely small, but then, you know, I didn't have anything to compare it with except the
well,
school library.
Well, I didn't either, because our library in Muscogee was very small, so, you know, it. This sounded good to me. It had books.
So what you built really was a Cadillac little library.
I'm just surprised that the way we planned that, how it stayed, you know, sort of in line with, of course, it's due to you two people for what you've done and what you offer and how you've presented it. And
well, that furniture is still the same, and it
the quality of the building and the furniture and stuff has made it last.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, but when you said entertainment, that's just about what we did, and you know, our entertainment was at home.
Mm-hmm.
It really was, but we had, like I said, the bridge clubs, the women's club, the roller rink, the. And then they did have dances out that pink building.
There was also a skating rink at one time.
Was it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I didn't know that. But they held dances out there, because I remember when I... Of course, I came from a wet state. So if you wanted to drink, you drank like a lady. And everybody was always running out the car, and I never could understand why. Well, I found out why, you know. They didn't want to bring a bottle, and I thought, good night, this is my cup of tea.
When did you learn to play the organ?
Hmm?
You played the organ in the church.
Yes, I did.
When did you learn to play? You haven't mentioned piano lessons or organ
lessons? Well, I had piano lessons, I was in the grades, and Mama thought we ought to have piano lessons, and of course it didn't take with Mars, but the teacher finally said to my mother, she said, there's no point in spending your money because Mars is too good a ear. She'd make the piano teacher play the piece and then she'd go home and play it. Of course, she played in a different key, and that's how the piano teacher knew what she was doing. And she said, but I plodded on as best I could, and I waded through Bach two-part inventions, and I worked. When I came here, Sally Height was playing the organ, and I don't know, maybe she had another baby or something. For some reason or other, I started playing the organ, and it was a pump organ. And but she directed the choir, and actually we had a nice choir, and
mm-hmm.
Sally was a wonderful director. She just was a natural. She honestly was. And she and I got along slick. I liked her, and she liked me, and it worked. But
and how big was the choir?
Well, the choir at that time was 12, mm-hmm. 14 people, and of course Sally had us practice every Wednesday night. If only six showed up, six practiced. The rest would have to catch up. And but now if we have six up there, we're lucky, and I quit when Reen got sick. I'd always mm-hmm. gone up there, and I thought, poor Reen, he sat down here alone all these years. It's time I sit with him, so I quit. And now, you know, those steps, I mean, it's a good thing you don't have a hernia, because you'd be in real trouble. And I mean, they're little narrow things, and they wind up, and it's difficult. And I went up there at Sally Height's funeral, because I thought, I've got to sing one last time. And I have the heart of a robin and the voice of a crow. However, I do sing on pitch. I mean, I have a good ear, but I'm not much help. By the time I got to the top of those stairs, I was tired. So I decided no more. But I took organ lessons for either a year or 2 years and learned a lot.
Who was your teacher?
Hmm?
Who was your teacher?
Remember that Mike Hall? Did you ever know Mike Hall? I don't think there'd be any reason. He came from Mullenville, and but he could play the organ. But he had a lot of talent, and he really, I took lessons from him, and I learned a lot. You know, however, oddly enough, our church has stayed pretty much with the declining population. If you did a ratio, it stayed, where the Methodist hasn't, or the Congregational. I think the Christian does better, doesn't it?
Maybe a little bit better than the Congregational, you know, but, you know.
Well, I know the other
we
day.
We used to have a big, you know.
Well, in the 50s and 60s, I guess we haven't said this with Kinsley, were all the churches that are here now then, or are there any additional ones that are here now?
Well, the Nazarene came later on. But we had one more. Do you remember that one that was on 7th Street? It was a little... It was right by Chapin's house.
Yeah, the Church and of...
Is that Church of Christ?
Yes, Church of Christ. We had 20 churches at one time when I was growing.
You?
Yeah, we had 20 churches.
Now, when we came here, I know we had like 10. When I began counting them. Mm-hmm. Of course, now we don't have that with the Episcopal closed, and the Nazarenes don't have them.
So it's a combination of losing population, but also the denominations losing members. Both, I think, at least in the Protestant side.
And if you want to... if you read anything, people are, they go to a fundamental church. Mm-hmm. And the Catholics, they now know they're not going to go to hell if they leave the church. You know, there was a time when fear was a great element. And that, I hate to even say it, but it's the truth. And they stuck there for love, money, and whatever. And now... We have a lot of young people who, have just plain left the church, and some who come when they feel like it. And of course, fortunately, the priests are more understanding too, and they don't give us hellfire and brimstone in a sermon. It's more hopeful. I'm surprised that our church actually has kept there, because every Sunday we've got to have at least 100 or 125 people, and a lot of times it's not like last Sunday. We must have had 150 people.
Oh, that's wonderful.
It is. Mm-hmm. And they give. This is what gets me. They are so generous in their donations. Now, I was talking to somebody. And she said that, you know, the Methodists, what are we going to do with this stone around our neck?
Mm-hmm.
And I know, as long as, when we had the school, we just barely made ends meet. But see, we're not paying insurance, we're not paying health care, we're not heating the school. Mm-hmm. So now our donations all go to the church, and we were able to put windows in the church, things that needed to be done years ago. We just didn't have the money, but now we do. So
when in the 50s, how would it have been about the same number of people attending a church?
Well, I mean, ratio-wise, yes.
You would have had more than 150 people in the 50s?
I think so, because you see, now St. Peter and Paul is closed, mm-hmm. And of course there aren't as many farmers as there were. But we get those people.
Well, the Belfry Church closed, right? Isn't there? Or are they still having services?
What?
The Belfry
has?
No,
they still have
services.
They still have services.
Oakerley has church, or do they?
Yes, yes.
But see, Oakerley used to have a large,
yeah,
you know, church.
Yeah,
the school
and they had a priest, a resident priest. We had a resident preschool. That doesn't happen anymore. And understandably so.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just amazed at our attendance. I really mm-hmm. am. And I really don't know why the Methodists have fallen down so terribly.
Well, I think it's maybe more the Protestant denominations. The mainline denominations are just losing, you know, two evangelical ones.
Well, I have a relative, and I don't know if she didn't tell me for years, but the last time she was here, she said, well, you know, I go to a different church. I said, good. How wonderful that you go to church. I said, what is it? Well, it's sort of a fundamentalist thing. And I don't know if I'm for fundamental. I don't know enough about it. But I think a lot of young people especially are going to those kind of churches, and they don't like regimented religion. And the Catholics have, well, they just, you know,
have
ritual. Yeah. It isn't bad if you miss Mass on Sunday. It isn't a sin. You know, if you gotta, you really should come, but they're not gonna raise hell if you don't. And I think that's made a difference in the Catholic Church, even though, well, I'm always ragging about it, something that I don't like, and that's not nice. But that there are things that certainly should have been approached and taken care of and not swept under the carpet like it was for so many years. And they finally have done those things, and I think this is a poor comparison, but it's sort of like, and I mean, so people have rejoiced in that and glad to see this happen. It's sort of like when Ford Company didn't take money from the government. Really, you know. That was so nice, people started buying Fords. And I think that happens but see that, like, the Methodist Church was never that rigid, so I don't know why they don't. Well, I feel so terrible about the Episcopal Church.
Well, I said you've got churches with older populations, and the population that's left here is older.
Yes.
And so those are the ones who have kept all the churches going, and the younger ones are not.
You know, if the older ones, well, and further on, this last question here.
About the future of Edwards County?
Yes. And I don't know when you want to talk about that.
Oh, I think it's fun, no.
Well, you know, I felt so bad about the Duckwalls, because the people who has the most impact on people like me. I can't drive to Wichita anymore. I mean, I can drive till I get to the town, and then I've got to have somebody drive for me. But this was so handy. I can't buy a dish towel. I can't buy a pair of socks. I can't buy yarn. I can't buy lipstick, for heaven's sake. It's gone, and it has a terrible impact on people like me, like I am. And there's a lot of us. And I think it's, when you say here, overall, what do you think of Edwards County? No, that isn't what it is. What's the future? I think there's hope. And of course, I'm a hopeful person, but I look at what they offer us. We have excellent medical care. We have doctors that come. I don't have to go to Wichita to this doctor for my macular degeneration. I don't have to go to a psychiatrist when I, you know, they come here. You've got a wonderful dentist. You've got an eye man. Now, what more could you ask? We have a library that is top drawer. That's all there's to it. We have a grocery store and he'll do anything for you. If you want to go over and get black rice, just a minute, I can order that tomorrow and you'll have it Thursday. We I just think we have a lot going for us if people would look at that. The thing that I think, and I even went to the economic development, I want to know how you got a grant and what you had to have and all this. But I think the most important thing is to keep what we've got. If we could just keep, like now, if we can get a store, and I don't know how you can do it, but I look at Mrs. Erbert's store. And even though, she has a lot of stuff there that people need and buy, but how long is she going to be able to keep it up? And I think the other thing, and I don't know what you can do about this, because it's just like President Obama said last night. He was talking about changing attitudes, and he said it has to start with the parents. Well, give me a break. You aren't going to tell parents what to do, and they aren't going to listen, and half of them don't give a hoot. And, you know, it should start at home. I know how much we've influenced our children. Some probably not as good as it should have been, but I know why they're interested in politics is because Reed and I were. I know why they went to church because we did. And I wish they could clean up this town. People...
Physically, you mean?
Yes. You know, you just like that house that's across the street from Ralph Poole. Now, why on earth they can't condemn that, I don't know. And tear it down. But that's what people see the first thing they come into town. When you come in from the south there where Cheryl lives, and I don't know whose junk that is next to the Coon Creek there, but it's a pile of junk. I mean, if they don't want that, plant some trees or bushes, something to, when people come into town, to have a pleasant approach.
You think your husband might have had a different opinion if when he came over the viaduct, if he was coming over it now?
I think he might have. Mm-hmm. I really do. You know, the houses...
Might not have stopped.
The houses were all taken care of. I mean, really, pretty much so. And I am... It's like our neighborhood. You look what's happened to it. And all you need is one person to come in and not take care of theirs, because it takes the property's value down, and somebody comes and they can't sell their house, and so they sell it cheaper, and they're the same kind, and they let junk in the front yard. And I mean, it can't stop people from buying houses. I mean, I don't know what the answer is, but I do know this, that you could make some laws and then stick with them. And it seems to me you have good reason to condemn some of these homes and buildings. Now that building that, well, out there where the skating rink was, you come into town, look at that mess. And thank God you come to this nice little park and the museum. That's a help. You know, what happened? I did write something down here. Well, the last 40 years. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, yes, one thing, the people were accepting of us. And Reen was able to go hunting. He was able to do these unusual things on the side, which probably was the reason that he was so well balanced. I mean, he didn't keep his nose to the grindstone all the time. And that in turn made life easier for me if he was happy. And the people of the community were very accepting of us, even though we seemed to be a little on the odd side at times. The fact that we had small town values that we could instill in our children, and felt comfortable with the people surrounding us. And there was a Catholic school here, which we knew people were interested in education, so that made a difference. And Let's see, is there anything else? I don't know. I guess not. But, and I told you what, I do have hope for the future. I think maybe we've hit a plateau in our population. Now, I'm reading the paper today, you know, how many people that Connie Oliphant has hired, and they have moved into town, and all that. And, and of course, Connie, I just hope she still can figure out, has time to figure income tax. I mean, some looks to me like she's really carrying an awful load. And of course, that's what we need. People like Mrs. Watson, who is a pusher, and my Connie, and if you have enough of those, it's nice if they also were real rich and subsidized. But I do know this, when you get a bunch of people together, if you get enough together and inspire enough and keep nagging at them, a lot of times you can accomplish more than you imagine. If you can do it. So
that's probably a good ending.